Hello, world. Welcome to the Breakout Finder podcast. I'm your host, Nate List. You can find me on Twitter at An Outraged Jew. And with me tonight, and all nights thus far, Mr. Ryan Lopes. You can find him on Twitter at StillRyan5. Ryan, we have not produced in numerous weeks, and I've heard about it.
We've gone through a drought of sorts. It's been trying times. The creative juices are flowing, Nate. They're just flowing through different outlets. I think we're putting a lot of time and effort to the old Patreon account, trying to cultivate things over there. The pod has suffered a bit, unfortunately. But I think we're gonna have some upticks here in the coming weeks. We're gonna start hitting our stride. This is our season coming up. You know, the bowl season, like the college football season is gonna wrap up as a whole eventually here. We're gonna be looking forward to all these prospects, Nate. And we're gonna have to be looked at to provide some sort of analysis on said prospects. So I'm excited. We're kind of that slow train right now, just kind of up a hill, you know what I mean, man? But we're getting there. We're getting there. And when we get there, Nate, tell them what happens when we get there.
When we get to the top of this hypothetical hill?
Mm-hmm. I mean, the one we're climbing right now.
I don't know. Caught off guard here. I guess it like levels out, maybe?
No, I mean, once you're at the top, and then that's where we kind of set up shop, Nate. That's where we set up shop, and inside that shop, you and I are just we're in there cooking at the top of the mountain, off the train, the top of a hill, in a shop, we're cooking.
I hate trains. I don't hate trains as much as I hate a certain guy at the gym. Ryan, you look in shape. You look like you hit
the gym.
You know,
cardio going.
Yeah, get the cardio going. I don't do cardio. I struggle to put on muscle mass as it is. If I do any cardio at all, I will lose everything. And I've already exceeded my genetics. I mean, I'm at the pinnacle. This is as much as anyone
this is as good as it gets for you.
Yeah, ever did. I'm like the Adonis of my family. And compared to most stronger men, I'm the weakest one. So
throw on your uncles at various family parties and stuff like that.
Yeah, we don't
challenge everyone to different arm wrestling competitions as they walk into your house.
I beat my stare whole family. They're all brittle. I'm the only one that's broken through that mold, and here I am. I'm on the other side
thriving.
Of the finish line and
thriving.
Yeah, exactly. I'm thriving. That's the only real word. No gains, but I'm thriving.
You're thriving. At the top of the hill is where you're thriving.
There's a guy, though, and not a guy in particular, but I'm saying like a type of guy at the gym, and I've never understood this, and maybe you've gone and seen the same thing. The slow walker. Have you ever seen the guy that's just so jacked that he walks at half speed? Do you know who I'm talking about?
Oh yeah, no, for sure. There's the gym that I go to is a gym that I've gone to for it must be like over a dozen years, and it's gone through a couple different periods of ownership, a couple different kind of people have come in, tried to do a couple different things with it. It was kind of like a casual spot to start. Then there was some more hardcore trainers. Now it's totally like there's some big dudes strolling around, and I'm in there just trying to get in, get out, just maintain the health. I'm not trapped up, Nate. I'm not trapped up.
I can
but,
tell.
But there's some
okay.
There's some dudes in there that you could classify as the slow walkers. Is there a purpose behind the slow walk, do we think? Like, is there, like, are they going, they're going somewhere, but they have to go there deliberately slow? Or is it just, are they showing off? Yeah. They're showing off what they got.
Like, I think it's directly proportional. Like, if you're really, really feeling yourself, you can't walk that fast. And these guys, like, the cutoff t-shirt, I've done 27,000 days in the gym.
Yeah.
And I've never worn a cutoff t-shirt my life.
No need.
No. I don't do it. I don't wear the tank top. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. I don't do it. But the slow walker, I saw a guy at the gym today. I went to the gym before this episode. That's why I'm always so hyped, because I take a pre-workout. I take a branch chain amino acid with a lot of caffeine.
Coursing.
And it psychs me up. It gets me ready to talk about how terrible Russell Wilson has been of late. And I, where he's probably not coming up on the show sheet. I got to relax myself.
He's not. Let's calm it down.
Catching L's against the Rams all the time.
We're okay.
But a message to the guy that slow walks at the gym, or for that matter, anywhere in life, all walks of life, if you will, pun intended. Walk a little faster. Walk with some purpose, for Christ's sake.
Walk with purpose.
You don't have anywhere to be.
Is the slow walker better or worse than the guy that sits on the machine and texts, right? Like, I mean, I'm all for catching your, you know, you rep right. as hard as you can, and then right. you're gonna take that 30-second cool down period. Right. But if that 30 seconds turns into like a minute 30, are you? Because again, you're here, bro. You're hopped up. You're bouncing all around. You're ready to go. Are you annoyed by these folks? Are slow walkers worse than the guy that's just got the line on the machine or in front of the weights?
Here's the thing, I don't like that, but hey, you were there first. I get it. Don't spend all day on your phone. But this guy that I'm talking about, now that you said that, it actually reminded me of something. You know when somebody's working on a machine or you know, they're doing some free weights and like they're on two things, but they're nowhere to be seen. And the minute you show up on the other thing, they pop over. They're like, bro, I got like, one more set. I got one more.
Panting behind you.
Yeah. Where'd you come from? I watched him because what I wanted to do were some weighted dips. I like doing weighted dips. One of my favorite things in the world. I'm watching this guy because he's on this squat machine that has these handles on the top that I like to use for dipping. So I'm like, screw it. I'm going to wait till this guy's done. Like, the dude walks like the equivalent of a quarter mile to the water fountain and comes back. Like, I own this machine. Here's the thing. Didn't leave a phone, didn't leave a towel, didn't leave a water bottle. Nothing there says that thing is yours. And as an experienced gym attendee, when I walk up to something that I'm not sure if somebody's on it, and this is a little pro tip for people, I grab onto the handle or the connector or whatever it is and just feel if it's warm. See if it's moving. Is somebody here?
You're performing straight up forensics in the middle of your workout.
Like, and so I feel it. I'm like, okay, it's warm. I start looking around. I'm like, where is this guy or this gal? Who is this?
You're out of your element. This isn't your normal habitat. You're encroaching on someone's space, and you're doing the niceties of you're stroking handlebars here, Nate. You're touching whatever you can touch.
I'm like wiping a bit of dust off the ground, like dirt.
Sniffing something. Like, so this is fresh.
I find like a shoe print on the ground, and so I'm laying watching people's foot as it rises to find that guy. Yeah. I'm just saying, like, listen, when the gym is crowded, don't try to take two machines. I've been in the gym a long time, and it's not cool, and I've never done it. I've never been that guy because I think it's ridiculous.
I need to know, do you have any – and this is – we can stop talking about the gym after this. No, I need to know, at your gym, do you have any, like – like over the top. I'm all for like getting into a man and like letting out like a, when you're at the end of the set, you're just screaming. But do you have any guys that are just like what? Like you don't have to scream that loud. You're screaming loud. Like, I get it. It's a lot of fucking weight. I respect it. I can't lift that. But at the same time, like, you don't have to scream.
No, I know.
Do you have any of those guys? Is that maybe it's just my spot? I don't know.
I got this guy. I'm not sure he's all there. He's sawed off. He's like 5'4", probably like 220. He has no neck. I've never seen a guy do this until I saw this guy do this. So he grunts, but it's like, yeah, every one of them, it's like super loud, like, yeah. And he straps the thing to the top of his head and attaches it to like the cable machines, and he uses the back of his neck, and he like, yeah, and he's and he's yanking it up, and nobody.
What is he working out? What
I don't
what
know.
Body,
like,
what muscle group is that?
Let me tell you, as a man who's exceeded his family genetics, if I did one of those, Adonis, my neck would snap like a number two pencil. Like, it would just pop. It would be over. I'd be in the hospital. I'd be making no Christmas cards. Me and my family wouldn't be doing anything. But yeah, I got a guy at the gym that does it. He wears long shorts down to like the low part of his shin. cutoff t-shirt, and he full flexes in the mirror. Like most people do the arms up, right, fist by your head, right, flex.
Maybe he a little side profile.
He does the double arms, pull them in to like right in the middle of your pelvic region and just, and he flexes after every set. And I'm like, you just did a neck workout and you're checking your biceps and it makes no sense to me.
It's not how science works, Mr.
Oh, I got a headache. Ryan, let's move on to football.
Because
that's what people came here for. They came to hear you and I talk about football.
Players and such.
You know, so that they can forget about their day. It's a busy time. It's the holidays. Yeah, people are out buying gifts, packages. Listen, we're gonna unwrap this package tonight. It's a great episode. And, you know, Ryan's been working hard on the Devy stuff. I mean, Ryan's got his ranks. He's got the ranks on the website. Those will be updated at some point in the future. And he's been releasing stuff on Patreon, which he has mentioned before. He's written two really good articles so far, very in-depth. So for those of you that are into breakdowns about players, a lot more than just maybe where they're going to land or where people have them ranked, Ryan's going really deep into these players. And there's a lot more to talk about. So it's super exciting. And when we're talking about Patreon, patreon.com/breakoutfinder, as a patron, you can get a question answered on the show live. And we have them. We have one this week from a new member. I'm going to read the question, Ryan. I've got some answers for this. Want to get your take on it. Yeah. It's a good question. The question is, are you avoiding drafting both draft-eligible wide receivers at LSU due to Joe Burrow's uber accuracy? Go ahead, Ryan.
You know what? Justin, I'm going to start with Justin Jefferson because he's the one that that kind of just missed like the cutoff for me as far as like the top 10 players. I've seen Justin Jefferson get touted as like a discount Jerry Jeudy, which was like super high praise because, I mean, those who are Patreon members, those who have been following me, know how high I am on Jerry Jeudy. But you know what? I think this is a little bit of a tougher question, maybe a bit of a loaded question. I'm excited to get your response too, Nate. Yeah. But Burrow, what Burrow's done this season and the way that he's elevated and kind of his bolstered his draft stock, you have to take his play into consideration to some degree when you're evaluating these wide receiver prospects. You know, we'll talk about Ja'Marr Chase in future episodes, and obviously as the year goes by, super special player. But this whole LSU wide receiver group, as it stands currently, eligible guys and non-eligible guys, these are all like four or five-star kids. These are legit talented receivers. So the way I look at it, obviously you have to bake in some of that quarterback skill and the way that Burrow's kind of elevated the talent around him. But at the same time, these are players that came in and are skilled and talented in their own right. I think Burrow, again, has done a good job of maximizing that skill. So I think you have to account for it. I'm going to kind of hedge you a little bit. I think you have to account for it. But at the same time, you want to, with all prospects, you want to evaluate them in a vacuum, look at them, look at their traits, what they do well. But again, Burrow's done a great job of just that whole LSU offense, man. It has been spectacular with him on the controls. So it's hard for me to really discount that.
So single season leader all time, Joe Burrow at 77.9% is number one all time right now. Of all college quarterbacks in a single season with at least 14 pass attempts per school game, sitting at number one all time in college. Naturally, the God, the only other player behind him, Colt McCoy, 76.7. Here's the thing about this. Here's my take on it. There's a history of this. I mean, we can go back. We can go to 2003, Phillip Rivers, 72% completion percentage. Here comes Jericho Cotchery, fourth-round pick. Now, this isn't the sexiest name I'm going to name, but he has multiple 80-catch seasons in the NFL after he comes from there. Because the point being made is, are we concerned that the accuracy is doing something, you know, in perception to what these players will actually be at the next level? I mean, we go to 2008. Chase Daniels at Missouri, he's over 70%. Churned out Jeremy Maclin, 100-catch season, round one. Obviously, good NFL player. Graham Harrell, Texas Tech, 70% completion percentage, boom. Michael Crabtree, round one, good NFL player. 2010, quarterback you've never heard of, Greg McElroy, 71% completion percentage. Julio Jones, boom, round one, NFL. Baker Mayfield, 70%. Mark Andrews, D.D. Westbrook, Marquise Brown. Here's Kyler Murray, 70%. Again, Marquise Brown, CeeDee Lamb. I think the fact that Burrows is doing this in the SEC is worth more to me than anything. That's the most impressive. A lot of these other quarterbacks I named did not play in the SEC. But these guys are also getting open versus SEC competition. And Burrows is still torching them. So I can't turn playing with an accurate passing quarterback into a negative. I refuse to do that because teams are still game scripting for Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase every week, but it's not working. So we've seen plenty of examples where an accurate quarterback, obviously it props up the production because teams are willing to throw the ball more with a quarterback that's competent. Clearly, he's beyond the college game right now, or at least the competition he's facing. I mean, the guy's playing on another level. But we've looked at numerous guys that played with quarterbacks that had high completion percentages, went on to the NFL, went in the round one, conversation, literally were drafted round one and became great NFL players. I mean, there are plenty of examples of quarterbacks that threw for over 70%. And again, Joe Burrows is at 77. He's closer to 80 than he's at close to 70%. So the guys that I named bordered on above 70% to 72%. So Burrow is on another level. But again, every week he's facing, round one draft eligible, day two guys at minimum. Like a lot of top players come from the SEC every year. So I'm not taking anything away from it. I think it's something to consider because, again, we've seen a lot of quarterbacks have high completion percentages and wide receivers have produced because of that, and they haven't become anything in the NFL. But a lot of those guys are in the Big Ten. A lot of those guys are playing in the American Conference. A lot of those guys are playing at conferences that are not the SEC. And I think the fact that it is the SEC is the ultimate determining factor for me. Because of who they're facing, and every week teams are game scripting for it, and they're just not stopping it.
And to kind of build on your point about these, as much as the quarterback play matters and kind of elevates things here, to build on your point about how these players are still getting open against, in this case, SEC-level cornerbacks, SEC-level defenders, you, again, look at Justin Jefferson and what he's able to do after the catch. He is still, whether or not Burrow's throwing him open, whatever the case may be, throws a beautiful ball, super accurate. After the catch alone, you look at Justin Jefferson's yak numbers and what he's able to do, the way he's able to just create for himself, extend plays, lead to a big play, produce the big play. You have to obviously credit the wide receiver at that point too. So definitely an interesting conversation. And there's really, as good as Jefferson is and as great as Burrow is, Burrow's about to be the number one overall pick. The guy that I'm super, super stoked on, and we're going to spend a ton of time talking about him, man, is Ja'Marr Chase. The season that Ja'Marr Chase has had, I'm probably gonna cut in line a little bit and end up writing him up a little bit earlier than I initially planned to for my Devy series, man. Just a really, really special player. Speaking of Devy and landing spots and futures and all that stuff, Nate, you and I were talking off air a little bit before. Dive into the kind of in season stuff, dynasty stuff that we want to kind of wrap up with as we look to put a bow on the regular season here. Let's talk about favorite rookie landing spots for both wide receivers and running backs. Let's start with wide receivers. You want to give a couple of your spots, and then I'll give a couple of mine, and we'll talk about kind of what makes them enticing. I know this one might be a little bit harder than I initially thought when I kind of put it down. You and I were kind of chopping up some of our choices before we went on here.
Yeah, this is an interesting one because many of the spots that players might end up. I mean, remember, this is a really, really deep draft class. I mean, this is why we talk about go and get those second round 2020 picks, because a lot of names are going to slide. Even if you're at the back end of your drafts, you're still looking at a lot of good names. And no matter what, inevitably, there is going to be a hyped up receiver that ends up in an NFL offense with an incumbent wide receiver, and he's going to do at least perceived damage to his value. It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, just some landing spots off the top of my head, not necessarily ones that I want them to go to yet, but just to illustrate this point, the Green Bay Packers could use a wide receiver. I mean, what does that do if one of these, upper echelon names in this class, if let's say, Devonta Smith or, let's say Chenault or something, they end up in Green Bay for whatever reason, it's like a day two pick or something like that. And I don't know that these guys, there's a lot of hype around Smith. I don't know where he ends up. But just hypothetically speaking, they need depth at that position. I mean, Lazard, however you want to say it, I can't believe that that's a guy that's starting right now. I mean, that just shows the depth, because earlier in the year, we were fighting over two entirely different receivers behind Devontae Adams. I mean, I remember people were stepping over people to get to, you know, Valdez-Scantling. And what's going on now? Like, so it changes so fast. You may have an incumbent starter, but things can happen like that. And it's not a death sentence, but as we've talked about off-air, Ryan, it doesn't happen often that a quarterback props up two wide receiver ones. So inevitably, somebody is taking a back seat. Or week to week, you're going to get the volatility like you do in Minnesota, where some weeks it's Diggs and some weeks it's Thielen. And it's hard to tell week to week who's going to have the floor. But in terms of landing spots, you know, I don't hate the idea of somebody going to the Jets. I know Robbie Anderson's there. I think we all believe that Sam Darnold is still ascending, still 22 years old. You know, not a great year this year. Been sick part of the year. I've had mono. Got it in an entirely different way than he did, I'm assuming. I've had it. I understand the issues with that. But some other ones. So, look, right now, let's talk about the Philadelphia Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
What's the future for Aguilar? You know, Alshon Jeffrey, old and hurt. DeSean Jackson, old.
Old and hurt, yeah.
Right? Arcega Whiteside, we don't know anything about him. And to be honest with you, when you look at the breakout finder, it doesn't really love J.J. Arcega Whiteside. And I refuse to say his last name the right way.
A quick sidebar. I think the announcers during the Philadelphia game on Monday night were doing the Catalonian list. And they the timeline was furious about it. People hated the fucking list, dude.
No, they were. And I should put context to this. So Arcega Whiteside is actually ranked as the number 13 wide receiver in the breakout finder for the 2019 class. So 24.6% breakout finder percentage. And again, this is going to be a tool for illustrating what a player's college career was like, but it has proven to have some predictive ability. So that's kind of the caveat to it. But when I'm looking at where he ranks, he's between Stanley Morgan and Scott Miller in this draft class. He's ahead of Hunter Renfro, but for different reasons. So we don't know what our Sega Whiteside is. So that's a player. And then, to be honest with you, I don't know what's going on with the Colts. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if one of these names popped up with the Colts, and that's an offense I like. And we're going to get to Paris Campbell in a little bit. But, you know, I think there's questions about what his future looks like there in terms of the player that they may have thought he was. Maybe he's still trending the direction that they had hoped, but he's going to take a little longer to break out. But T.Y.'s old. All the other names that are there feel like fillers. Like, I'm not the type of person, I've stood by this forever. I've never been the guy that really gets behind these undrafted free agents, late drafted wide receivers that never got an opportunity and suddenly they fizzled to the top due to injuries or whatever. I don't get behind those guys. And if I do, it's to take them and then trade them. That's what I do. I'm not using them. I'm not holding them. It's not a long-term answer. It's going to come through the draft, and those are two of the teams I like. I know you had some really good ones, Ryan. Give me yours. Yeah.
Well, I got the first one that came to mind for me is the Arizona Cardinals. You have to be super excited about what we saw from Kyler Murray year one. A bit up and down to start. But I like the future of Kyler Murray. I like the future of Kyler Murray. What I don't like in Arizona. Nate, do you want? Let's talk about Kyler Murray. You want to talk about Kyler Murray?
I want to talk about Hakeem Butler, the other guy that they drafted.
Listen. I've told you. I don't want to talk about Hakeem Butler.
When we talked about it the last time, you said that you were just going to take an L publicly. Just take an L.
No, we're not taking an L yet. Let's talk about Kyler Murray, man. Kyler Murray, I'm excited about Kyler Murray. My thoughts about the Arizona Cardinals, Larry Fitzgerald cannot play forever, although I did see some sort of tweet today from someone Arizona media affiliated that Cliff Kingsbury was going to pitch his 2020 offense and kind of, you know, future to Larry Fitz, hoping he gets another year out of him. So
Jesus
Larry Fitz, yeah, Christ. Larry Fitz might Frank Gore, man, and just play forever and just kind of keep cucking whoever he's cucking over there. Outside of Larry Fitz, man, let's pretend we live in a world where Larry Fitz does retire next year or walks away, wherever the case may be.
I'll never live in that world.
Well, you and I might never live in that world. So we got Christian Kirk, but I guess I say all this, I bundle all this up. I like the Arizona spot because I think they're going to target one early. And, you know, Cliff, they ran the most. I think they're going to finish the year, but they ran the most, you know, four wide type set. So obviously Cliff wants to throw it. Kyler Murray, great thrower of the football. So I like the Cardinals. You and I talked a little bit about the Saints. off air for kind of reasons that you mentioned with Green Bay. I don't know that Breeze currently, this Drew Breeze, as good as he has been playing, can support another kind of high-end stud wide receiver opposite Mike Thomas. Mike Thomas, a complete monster, going to vacuum from all those targets sub, but I think outside of, you know, the depth chart behind Michael Thomas leaves a lot to be desired. So I wouldn't be surprised if New Orleans kind of jumps up early. The only other team I guess I could throw out there, I'll give you two, because one of them, whenever I talk about Oakland, and I always feel like I'm kind of pulling the homer card talking about Oakland, but Oakland's definitely going to target a wide receiver. Really, they got John Gruden there. They're going to target one. It's just how good. Do you feel about Derek Carr going forward? Is he the guy under center in Las Vegas next year in 2020? So if there's kind of some upheaval there, what good does that do their brand new shining, you know, wide receiver one? Tyrell Williams kind of leaving a lot to be desired, more of that wide receiver 2-3 mold than he ever was, like a wide receiver 1-2 or something like that. So Oakland's definitely going to draft one. The last team I'll talk about, and then we'll move on to running backs. I like Buffalo as a landing spot too. Outside of John Smokey Brown, they don't really have a ton to write home about there in Buffalo. So those are some of the spots that I like. We won't talk about prospects too much. We'll save that for shows to come. But definitely some interesting opportunity there. But I think with most of these, Nate, as you said, they all kind of have a little asterisk mark next to them too. So definitely something to talk about going forward. What about for running backs, man? Are there some teams, one or two teams that you have highlighted that you're particularly interested in?
I mean, I think the obvious ones seem like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That's been a team that we've been going round and round about a bunch. I mean, I don't want to say the ones that you named because you came up with a couple, but one that seemed sneaky to me and it wouldn't surprise me one bit would be the Atlanta Falcons. I mean, this is a good offense. The line's not been great this year, but you know, Devonta Freeman's got some injuries. He's been playing a lot longer than even I expected with some of these injuries that have come around. I kind of thought that this guy was going to taper off. He's been productive for the most part, I mean, up till this year, but look what's behind him. Ito Smith, Brian Hill, I mean, shout outs to Brian Hill, but I'm just not on the bandwagon. Look, these guys are replaceable. The running back position, different from the wide receiver position, a guy can ascend from a late draft pick and become a contributor with, you know, some long-term value. At the wide receiver position, it typically doesn't happen. But I could see Atlanta being one of these spots that day two, one of these running backs is going to slide, you know, maybe third-round pick, and they add a guy and put some depth behind Freeman. So that wouldn't surprise me in the least. And I know you had some really good ones. So yeah. What are your spots?
I'm big on the Falcons with you. As much as fun that we had with Brian Hill for that window, I don't think that he's the future either. So I could definitely see Atlanta kind of investing while they got that Matt Ryan, Julio Jones window somewhat still open, maybe not. The one that came up that you and I both were on the same page with that we got excited about off air, Nate, was the Houston Texans. We talked about the Texans a ton this past offseason. You and I got way too excited when they went ahead and traded for Duke Johnson just to treat Duke Johnson like Duke Johnson's always been treated. Unfortunately, hasn't quite been free. Doesn't seem like that's in the cards for him, at least not in Houston. But they got Duke. They got Carlos Hyde. None of these guys are currently, you know, RB1 type material. And with Deshaun Watson at the helm, DeAndre Hopkins, obviously, Will Fuller, if he can stay healthy, that offense is still one of the higher end offenses. So I think it's a perfect landing spot for a brand new running back. One, the other one that I'll mention here, and we can move on. Maybe somewhat sneaky. There was a bit of a conversation this past week about how this might be, as good as this draft class is, this 2020 running back class looks on paper, this might be one of the drafts where we do not see a round one running back. And our guy, Russell Clay, and I kind of went back and forth on a little bit of a side tangent talking about how if Jonathan Taylor's not off the board round one, we're going to be out here eating tweets or something like that. I'm definitely thinking at least one, if not two backs are going round one. Probably my favorite team player fit towards the end of round one in that 25, 30 something range, wherever the Kansas City Chiefs pick. I could see the Chiefs going running back early. And I love the idea of DeAndre Swift in that offense, man. I think he'd be the perfect back for that Andy Reid offense. The counterpoint to that landing spot was that, you know, historically Andy Reid has kind of gravitated towards that late round running back, that undrafted type running back. He doesn't really need that high investment to get that higher end production out of a back in that system. So the Chiefs are a really interesting spot, obviously, with Tariq Hill, all that firepower, Kelsey, Patty Mahomes. It'd be a perfect spot for someone like a DeAndre Swift who might slip towards the end of round one. So that could be super enticing if those stars do align. Are you high? Just a little bit of a sidebar, side tangent. Are you stoked on DeAndre Swift, Nate? I know I feel like he's kind of had a little bit of a, you know, he was kind of the de facto, the default. No one was touching him, and now as the season kind of progressed, DeAndre Swift maybe hasn't been mentioned as much as he was this past offseason.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. And you know, I've heard the argument tread on the tires with him a little bit. You know, just because there's a little bit of some backfield sharing there, but he's doing all the requisite things, and this was a player that everybody was super high on prior to this year. Now I'm with you, the Jonathan Taylor thing, like that guy is looking
has to go top 32 somewhere.
He looks like one of the better backs that I've seen come out in the last couple of years, and the fact that we've seen that uptick in the receiving game, like we needed to see that. Now don't get me wrong, I've seen him drop the ball a couple times this year on some routes. Now I don't think he's the most sure-handed player. Yeah. But it feels like almost like a pump for draft capital by his team. Like, okay, look, we're going to get you some targets because we know, like, you come out of the year with, like, 13 catches, Johnny, and you're good.
You'll be okay.
You're good. Yeah. You're going to go round one. Like, I would be very, very, very surprised if he didn't go round one with, like, the recent trend of the Seahawks and the New England Patriots grabbing a running back right there at the turn to go into round two. Like, I would be surprised if one – like, it seems like such a crazy thing. I mean, how crazy would it be for a team like Baltimore sitting there, though they have Ingram, to like add a guy that, you know, with the idea that maybe Ingram walks, and it is greedy, but God, that would be
sexy.
That'd be such
an
incredible
thing. I like it.
But yeah, I'm with you. I like him, and just kind of curious where some people have him ranked. I see I have Taylor number one, but that's just me.
I'm with you. Let's talk about a guy that the Breakout Finder had number one at wide receiver. The things that the guy, the kid, A.J. Brown, is doing. Dude, Tannehill back in the fold here, breathing life to that Tennessee Titans offense. We've talked about A.J. Brown a lot. Again, the Breakout Finder model loved him. He was, Nate, correct me if I'm wrong, he was at the very tippity top as far as his 2019 class was concerned. And he has not disappointed. You know, it was a little bit rocky to start with Marcus Mariota. But again, Ryan Tannehill in the fold. Ryan Tannehill is going to get paid this offseason. Sounds like I could have swore I read something that they're working on like a contract extension like right now. So yeah, the future looks good for A.J. Brown. Corey Davis, not so much.
Corey Davis is dead.
He's dead.
Where is Corey Davis? I'm going to start a GoFundMe. Let's start printing his face on the side of milk cartons. Let's get him out on the streets. Let's beat the streets and find this kid. Where did he go? Somebody check the woods. Listen, since Ryan Tannehill has been quarterback of this team, a lot of things have changed. For one, Derrick Henry has been murdering. Go back and look. He was okay in his opportunities when playing with Marcus Mariota. But since Tannehill has taken over the job, the dude has been in fuego. And I'm terrible at Spanish. But A.J. Brown is having one of the better rookie seasons we've seen in quite some time. I mean, the guy's pushing to cross the 1,000-yard mark. There's a good chance he gets very, very close. There's few receivers that have done that as rookies. He's averaging over 20 yards per reception right now, which is number three amongst all wide receivers. He's number two in yards per route. He's, number six in yards after the catch right now. I mean, the guy's doing the yak thing. And this is all on 4.7 targets per game. So the Ryan Tannehill emergence has been huge. I mean, look, Tennessee is number 30 in pass plays per game. So they're not throwing the ball a lot. But since Ryan Tannehill has been there, there has been an uptick. But again, Tannehill has only exceeded 23 pass attempts one time in the nine starts that he's had. So for the most part, Tannehill's floating at about 21 attempts a game. That's not a lot. I mean, that's like Teddy Bridgewater world, but that's not really an issue when you're averaging 73.4% completion percentage. So he's being highly accurate at 9.8 yards per attempt. I mean, who the fuck is this guy? What is going on? Where did this Ryan Tannehill come from? I mean, we knew he was semi-good looking, and we knew that he had a couple 4,000-yard seasons on his resume, but like Tennessee seemed dead in the water, and this is a perfect example of why sometimes the air quote landing spot isn't really the best determining factor the talent of the player is, because oh shit, he went to a team that had Corey Davis and Marcus Mariota, put him in a pine box. That's a death sentence. But what happens is you put Mariota and Corey Davis in the same pine box to save money, and you put him in the same grave. And now you got Ryan Tannehill throwing dimes to A.J. Brown, and it looks like we've got something beautiful going. Ryan Tannehill's going to get re-signed. Derrick Henry's looking like a machine out of this backfield. And suddenly, uh-oh, A.J. Brown is looking a lot better than he did coming out of the NFL draft. And this is going to hit people in the 2020 draft. We've been debating the CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jeudy thing, the 1A, 1B, however you want to cut it. Mark my words, one of these two guys is going to go to a stink bomb situation. And don't do the dumb thing and avoid taking one of these guys for the third best receiver in the class because he went to a better situation. You'll regret it.
To be completely clear, I loved A.J. Brown. I guess I wasn't as high on him as some others, but again, the numbers loved him. Everything about A.J. Brown lined up. I had a tweet that said literally A.J. Brown's one of the receivers, maybe since like an Amari Cooper even, where like unequivocally just checked literally every single box. Yet he had a bit of a slip, I guess you can call it. So I say all that to say, what he has done this season, what he will do going forward, is all roses. Very excited about it. What he did last week, I think, deserves a touch of context. I don't think people are truly, ready to understand or admit or even talk just how bad this Oakland secondary is. Mm-hmm. You and I, Nate, we're gonna average some decent yards after the catch. You and I might score against this Raiders secondary, man. So A.J. Brown smoked him, and again, he looks good, has looked good, will continue to look good. I guess I might not be dumping as much stock in as some other people are into this, last week's performance alone. But again, that's not to say that I'm not super, super high and I'm going forward. I think you have to make moves to position yourself to acquire a player like A.J. Brown at this point. But man, it's that Oakland. I can't reiterate enough how bad this Oakland defense is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. It's not exciting times when you're torching Oakland. But the thing is, it's the same way I feel about playing in the MAC conference or some conference that I just don't respect. Like, dominate your competition, right? Don't be average. Like,
for sure.
Great.
And he definitely did that.
And
he definitely
smashed.
Did that.
They smashed. All right. Here's a person that I've been telling people. Lots of other guys on Twitter have been doing the same thing, so I'm not going to take any credit for this. But Kerryon Johnson, if you're in a redraft league, stash him. He's eligible to return in week 16 against Denver. I love Kerryon Johnson. I've been a fan of him since he got to Detroit. 2019 hasn't been the same season that we saw from him in 2018, where he was a much more elusive back. But he looks like a feature option. He was a guy that crept up in the draft, surprised a lot of people going where he did to Detroit. But this is a guy that I'm a big fan of, and he's coming back. I mean, what are your thoughts on Kerryon Johnson?
I mean, I think we now have like all the context we need about Kerryon Johnson. Given, I remember just like it was yesterday, Nate, about the big fun Ty Johnson, waiver week that was, people were so excited about. No problem. We got the Lions have Ty behind Kerryon. It's gonna be like no one missed a beat. Unfortunately, that running game was a full blown committee backfield. They leaned on, I guess, Bo Scarborough, who everyone I guess either forgot about, left for dead. The fact of the matter is none of these guys are given what we've seen from them, at least none of these guys look like true feature runners. Kerryon Johnson, on the other hand, to your point, looks like that feature back. I'm curious though, again, context is key here as well, closing out redraft leagues. I'm curious what your thought is going forward with the Kerryon Johnson. I've heard a lot of kind of weird rumblings that what if Matt Stafford's done in Detroit? Is that even remotely a possibility for you? Like, what happens when Stafford might be kind of underappreciated. It's interesting to think about that offense without Stafford. He's kind of been a punch bag of sorts, but now with that offense without Stafford I'm not even sure it's watchable. So does that factor into your future evaluation of Kerryon Johnson?
I mean, obviously you never want to see a good quarterback leave an offense. I mean, it could change everything. In 2018, he targeted the running back position more than anybody in the league. So that was a big boon to the receiving ability of these guys. And for Kerryon Johnson, yeah, that would be a factor. Obviously, defenses are going to play differently. If they know that all they have to do is get pressure on the quarterback or stop the run, that's going to change a lot of things. But I'm not sure that I buy into this yet. I've heard it before. It's not often that quarterbacks leave organizations. I feel like they're going to mend whatever it is. The injury stinks. Detroit looks terrible right now. But I own Kerryon Johnson. He was a guy I wrote up in my Buy Lows article about 6 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
He's trending back up this direction now, obviously. But this is a guy that creates on his own. So, yes, losing a quarterback would be a big factor. But I still want to own Kerryon Johnson where I can because, again, Kerryon Johnson is still only 22 years old. I mean, he's year two in the league. I mean, he'll be 23 next year in his third year in the league. Hyper young player. Productive in 2018, the way we wanted him to be, was on target to catch, 50, 60 balls. So this is a guy that I'm a fan of, and you should be targeting him. There's no reason not to.
Yeah, the receiving, I guess question mark. That was kind of the only box that was left unchecked for me. I Kerryon was kind of a weird evaluation for me. Going back to when he was coming out of college too, is I didn't know if it was a matter of what was he a Ronald Jones where he truly just couldn't catch the ball, or was it a matter of just simply utilization for Kerryon Johnson? And to your point, I think he caught 30 something balls his rookie season, was trending in the right direction, obviously derailed a bit by injury. So for me, the only hesitation that I have with Kerryon Johnson, and it's probably more nitpicky at this point than anything else, is his ability to be a consistent factor in that passing game. And obviously, especially if Matthew Stafford is no longer part of that equation, that completely tanks any kind of hope you have, I would think, going forward. But in a vacuum, with Stafford still there, I think you have to like Johnson, what he's shown, the way he's able to kind of carry this offense, work kind of in that feature running, three down back type role. But again, if I had one kind of nit to pick about it, it would be his ability as a consistent receiving back.
Understandable. So that's an interesting one. You want to talk about players that are going, this year into next year.
Mm-hmm.
Who are the players or player that you're excited about or you're intrigued to see go from 2019 to 2020 into their sophomore year?
Yeah, I the name that I had written down, the name that I kept kind of coming back to, and I might be like a year too early with that as far as that sophomore jump, but I'm excited about Mecole Hardman. I just don't know if he manages to take that big of a piece of the pie with a Travis Kelce still there, with a Sammy Watkins, even though he's hobbled half the time, with obviously a Tyreek Hill, with the possibility of the Chiefs maybe drafting investing in a running back in one of these earlier rounds here. But I love the talent, I love the spot, I love the pairing with him and Patty Mahomes. We've seen Mahomes kind of lean more heavily on Hardman all over the field when Hill was sidelined, when other players have been banged up. So Hill's definitely a name that I've been keeping kind of close tabs on. As far as that sophomore jump, I'm not sure it happens in sophomore year. That might be a year or so too early. But a really good spot. Obviously, anybody that paired with a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes. We've seen so many good, rookie wide receiver performances this year, Nate. We talked about AJ Brown. I kind of just hyped up Mecole Hardman a little bit, although he isn't in that same kind of realm. Is Deebo Samuel a guy that you're excited about year two? This is a player that I think he might be the obvious answer. I'm not sure, but he's a player that kind of had that hype coming into the season. Dante Pettis had all the opportunity in the world and kind of squandered it. This Niners offense appears loaded. They got one of the best offensive play calls, one of the best play callers in the league. Samuel, over the past few weeks, man, has been on a tear of sorts. You have to love his projection going forward. Is he the obvious answer? Is he who you would be pegging in that sophomore jump?
I mean, I think that Deebo Samuel seems like the guy that I would be. I'd be upset if this didn't continue. Like, Jimmy G is playing better than even I thought he would. It's making me sick to my stomach, to be quite honest with you. You know, Deebo Samuel has been great. I mean, he's shown up in a big way. And with Emmanuel Sanders coming back healthy this year and playing well here recently, it's going to open some things up for Deebo. Deebo is a yards after the catch guy, too, which is going to be big for this offense with George Kittle and his skill set. The player that I'm excited to see next year that hasn't done really anything this year, just enough to intrigue me, was Andy Isabella. That's a guy that's paired with a quarterback that we both like in Kyler Murray. I know that you're talking about this team being one of those spots that may draft a receiver, and it wouldn't surprise me. I just like Isabella's big play upside. He goes in the second round. He's kind of that. He's the white Brandon Cooks. I mean, he has all those similar intangibles, and he's a guy that the breakout finder absolutely loves. I mean, one of the highest breakout percentages all time, to be honest with you. So he's a guy that I'm really, really high on, and I own him everywhere, and I'm excited to see him next year. This has just kind of been a forgotten year. You know, Larry Fitzgerald just needs to go away. What are you doing, Larry? Spend some time with your family. Like, go enjoy your life. You know, I mean,
just stop playing football for a year.
He's going to become an offensive lineman. He just loves blocking so much. Just going to get out there. But Isabella is definitely one of those names for me, or at least somebody that I'm a fan of.
I like it. Let's talk about kind of let's do a 180, the other side of that story, and not, you know, the ascending, you know, the rainbow side of things here. But what about a player? Could be a running back, could be a wide receiver. I kind of like the analogy of who is next year's Damian Williams. Now, full disclosure, I was a Damian Williams guy. I guess I held on to him for too long. He was kind of he was that player that he finally got his chance, and I wasn't gonna not see it through. Unfortunately, things did not work out in Kansas City, as many smart people had suggested that they wouldn't. So is there a player that that is kind of towards the end of the season now that is kind of getting that run? He's positioning himself, but you can't feel like there's an inevitable letdown coming next year if he does kind of walk into the season as that de facto running back one. Or it could be, again, it could be a wide receiver, it could be a tight end that's maybe ascended and might walk some things back next year. Is there a player or two that you might have in mind, Nate?
Oh, man, people are not going to like this one. People are not going to like this one one Uh-oh. Bit. I'm gonna throw a name out there, and I'm ready for it, but I'm going to go ahead and say Darius Slayton. This is a guy that has blown up this year, like in a big way. This was a fifth round drafted wide receiver. This was a guy that was a good athlete, like many of these players in this class were, and he has exceeded expectations thus far. I mean, numerous big games, a lot of multi-touchdown games, doing it with a rookie quarterback that a lot of people feel is inept in some senses, but has played okay. The other night with Eli Manning, blew up yet again against Philly. He's a guy that's going to have a lot of hype, but look, the New York Giants also feel like a team that could take a wide receiver. Wouldn't surprise me one bit if a guy like Devonta Smith ends up, you know, playing for the New York Giants all of a sudden and kind of changes things, because Sterling Shepard is a staple there. He's not going anywhere. And I have a feeling that Darius Slayton could slide back a little bit. So he's got mega hype right now. That's a guy I probably would be selling. And he feels like that type of guy up until the NFL draft. He's going to have that buzz. People are going to say, oh, the New York Giants are good. They've got Shepard. They've got Tate. They've got Darius Slayton. They don't need to invest early. And suddenly, boom, here comes an early day two guy to kind of shake things up a bit.
Yeah, I like it. The one that the player that came to my mind is a running back. We've seen Raheem Mostert, man. We had our guy John Proctor back on the show months ago at this point, and he was saying the little on his DFS side of things, man. They referred to Mostert as Raheem Mustard, and that's what the Niners are doing to him right now, man. They are riding him. Obviously, McKinnon non-factor for the past couple of years. Tevin Coleman made a move for him. He's going to factor in, I guess, in the future in some sort of capacity, given his history with Kyle Shanahan. Matt Breida, a player that I know that we're both relatively high on, but unfortunately the story with Breida has always been just his availability. Cannot seem to get through even a single game without getting banged up in some sort of capacity. So that's a backfield that I think continues to stay packed. I wouldn't be surprised if Shanahan does acquire, you know, sign a free agent running back, draft a relatively early running back. I think he just loves having that variety, that flexibility. So as good as Mostert looks right now, his utilization to close the year, the way they're leaning on him, I just can't help but feel like that is going to, you know, someone's going to kind of bite early next year, and that's going to kind of, you know, result in a bit of a letdown, a la Damian Williams. So that's the player that I'm the most hesitant about going into next season. Let's stick with running backs here and talk about a player that I know you and Mr. Matt Kelly have talked about quite a bit lately. I think a lot of players have talked about him quite a bit. But similar to Breida in the sense that the injuries, you know, are kind of adding up. What is give us the poetry, Nate, on Darius Geis right now? Is there an update? I believe he had the MRI. I believe he's done for the year. I think that's the last I heard. I mean, this seems to be kind of a reoccurring theme here, unfortunately, for a player that quite clearly is a talented player. But again, goes back to the whole availability thing. Where are you at with Darius Geis?
I mean, your buy window just opened up again. Look, there's no question that Darius Geis has proven himself this year in limited opportunity. He showed everybody what, you know, he fell in the draft. He fell in the draft. I mean, straight up, that guy should have been a first-round pick or, you know, very, very, very early second-round pick. He fell a little bit in that draft for, you know, reasons based on, I think, his interviews. It was a weird thing. For him falling, and there was some unsubstantiated stuff that floated around. But I'm a big fan of him. And remember, I think that Darius Geis right now is still only 22 years old. So still another hyper young running back in this class, you know, elite athlete, explosive athlete. We saw what he did this year, you know, yards after the catch as a receiver, big running plays. I mean, he got hurt on another big run. I mean, it's so typical. Preseason 2 years ago, tears the ACL on a big run, has a big run this year. You know, gets hurt again. I don't think that he's injury prone because this was a guy that I believe was relatively healthy back in college. I mean, and again, playing in a very physical conference. So it's weird to me that this happens, but I would buy. I feel like AP will be around for another year, which will insulate his value. Hopefully they don't add another running back to this offense. But these are the situations where suddenly teams start to question if this guy's going to be healthy enough to be relied upon. And if he's not, here comes that third-round draft pick running back, some sizable feature, you know, athlete that suddenly gets in there and puts a touch squeeze on Le'Veon Bell at the point that Peterson starts to fizzle out. Or, you know, Darius Geis comes back a little less than 100%, isn't playing his best, and this other running back plays really well, and you can't put him back in the bottle now. I mean, a lot of negative things could happen, and that's how I would probably pitch it to another owner, because I would love to acquire Darius Geis. Most of us took him at the 102, 103 in most drafts. I think you were taking Saquon Barkley number one unanimously.
Mm-hmm.
So you took him early. You're probably getting him for pretty cheap. I mean, in all honesty, I don't know that the 201 in the 2020 class with all of its hype and some other little piece doesn't get you Darius Geis right now. Like, you could pair something up and go get him at low cost. And I do want to own him because even in that Washington Redskins offense, we saw him play and make huge plays and put up some big points. So I'm still excited for Darius Geis.
Yeah, there's another player that he's on the mend as opposed to just being put on the shelf, but Juju Smith-Schuster was a full participant in Wednesday's practice today. Again, not the season. I've sat on this show before and I've sobbed for a few minutes at a time. He was Smith this year in redraft was a player that I was taking right before the turn, on the turn in the first round, whatever it was. He felt like an absolute no brainer to smash, even that, like, you know, that 12th overall ADP or wherever you were taking him. He felt like an absolute lock to just completely blow past all that. And then obviously the whole Big Ben thing happened. The Steelers looked completely lost to start the season. Now, fast forward through the injuries, through the quarterback changes, Tomlin's had a hell of a coaching job, a hell of a run here. But I guess I'm curious. I mean, am I overthinking the future of Juju Smith? He has to be a no-brainer hold at this point. But I'm wondering if he blows up these last 2 weeks of the season, few weeks of the season, I should say, is this someone that you look to perhaps maximize and kind of is there some sort of window that would open up here, Nate, for you where you would feel comfortable offloading Juju, just knowing that even if the Steelers get Ben back next year, it's probably not going to be the same Ben that we've had in years past. And then you kind of have to wonder, are you going to play the Duck Hodges game going forward? What's the quarterback beyond Ben? Is it worth your time? Is Juju that good to negate, you know, potential, you know, bad or, you know, just, I guess, bad quarterback plays? Do you have a consensus on Juju here?
I mean, I think for the most part, people are really overthinking Juju Smith. This is a guy that's only 23 years old, and there's a lot of factors that have gone on here. You know, injuries, quarterback change multiple times, the emergence of two other receivers that were taken in the second and the third round. I mean, very good receivers. A backfield that's been in flux a majority of the year. This is just a really weird situation for Juju coming into this year. And again, I talked about it before. Losing Antonio Brown was a big deal. Whether people want to admit it or not, losing an elite player on the opposite side was a big deal. I mean, coverages had to roll a safety over the top, double team. I mean, they had to worry about Juju too, his playing style. But he became the number one, and at times it looked like he was struggling in that role. I still have Juju Smith a lot higher than probably most people. I think you can't move him outside of your top. God, he's got to be still top seven, near the top five, without question. I mean, Michael Thomas is the number one at this point. Juju's, and I don't have the ranks in front of me, but Juju's definitely right there, 4, 5, 6. So I'm still a fan. I don't know that there's going to be a sell window, and I'm not really sure that I want to sell. You're never going to get what he's truly worth. I think everybody's going to try to lowball you at this point. Right. And Juju's still worth numerous first-round picks. Now, if somebody came to me with two good 2020 first-round picks, high picks, yeah, I'd probably consider it. I mean, if I could go and get – if for some reason I can end up with Judy and CeeDee, if they were high enough, and I don't know that anybody would do that, I would do it for sure. But for me, I'm still a huge fan of what we've seen from Juju Smith-Schuster. I mean, he's that good. It's just the situation's been bad this year.
Yeah. We don't normally, not to say that we plan any of this shit, man. I was gonna say we don't like to close on a low note, but you and I don't know what the hell we're gonna do from show to show, from minute to minute on this show here. So I'm just gonna roll with it, man. Speaking of bad situations here, we got some pretty bad news for our guy. Definitely your guy. I'm going to call him my guy as well. We'll call him our guy. Our guy, Paris Campbell here, Nate. It seemed like. Only months ago, where you put on that beautiful spacesuit, and you were up in outer space with Paris Campbell, just floating around, enjoying reaping the benefits of a stellar combine here. So you and I had high hopes for Paris Campbell. Obviously, this season did not work out. His rookie season did not work out the way that you and I had anticipated. A few minutes ago, just mentioned maybe the Colts is a sneaky place to land another kind of early mid round wide receiver next year to kind of bolster that group right now. So what is it? We had someone crawling our mentions. Might have been just only yesterday where they might have tagged you and I in a post as soon as the news broke that Paris Campbell was being put on the shelf. And you and I might have sent a gif each or something like that. But again, it's trying times for us over here, Nate. So do you have any kind of uplifting outlook on Campbell's future here for the good people that may also be fellow Paris Campbell fans?
Yeah, I think so. I think this season hasn't gone the way that we had all hoped, and it's unfortunate because this was a depth chart that's had issues all year. I mean, we lost Funchess early in the year. T.Y. Hilton's been banged up. Andrew Luck's gone. That's obviously a big change, but Jacoby Brissett is not a bad quarterback. I mean, he plays well enough in terms of fantasy football that guys are producing in this offense. I mean, you can go back to the Week 14 loss to the Buccaneers. There was a 50-yard passing play that would have been a score that he couldn't connect with Paris Campbell. So that would have changed everything. Had 5 targets that game, but no, he hasn't been great. Now he's going to the IR with a broken foot. So not a good year. Still a fan of Paris Campbell. Still think there's a lot of upside there, but I also believe that the Colts definitely seem like a spot that they might want to add some depth considering how far they've scraped. They've pulled guys off the practice squad, added them to the active roster, and they're getting starts or they're getting snaps on game day. So, I mean, that's stretching pretty far for a team that considered itself a playoff contender before the season started. So depth is clearly a concern here. But yeah, it was a bit of a concern to see Paris Campbell not playing that much. I mean, similar to the way that Andy Isabella was. There's two guys that got drafted in the second round that really haven't shown much this year, other than sort of spot start opportunities. And they both ended up in offenses that didn't really have a lot of weapons. I mean, there was clearly number ones there, and there were some veterans there, but neither team was so loaded at the position that they shouldn't have gotten on the field and started making plays. So I would still like to own him. I haven't seen a reason to not be a fan because all the intangibles are there, plus draft capital, plus, you know, a fresh year next year. But you've got to be worried about what the Colts are going to do with this offense going forward.
Nate, this is where you and I have – we started the show. We were climbing towards the top of that mountain. We're still getting there, buddy. But we're safely at – you and I, we've safely arrived at base camp right here. We got nothing else left. We got nothing else left on these sheets of ours here. So you can do us a solid, and you can plug what you got to plug. Tell the people where they can find us. Tell the people what we got coming up, and you can get us the hell out of here.
Roger that. So, like I said, you know, over on Patreon, Ryan's doing Devy stuff. I'm releasing a series now on Dynasty Cells. Look, everybody wants those 2020 picks, but who do you confidently cut from your roster to acquire them? I got a lot of names. I got a lot of players that may shock you to see them on this list, but you need to get them off your roster before they melt. They are a turd out in the sun.
I did not know you were going to go with the turd analogy. I figured snowman. I thought you were going to do snowman.
No,
you want me turd.
They're a turd. I mean, this is where I'm in Arizona speaking. That's what this is. It's very hot.
Very hot.
So get over there, check that out. A lot of fun stuff. As soon as this episode is over, Ryan and I are recording a Devy prospect analysis. We're going to talk about one of these 2020 draft eligible athletes, tell you where we think he's going to land, tell you what we think his upside is, what does the breakout finder think about him. So a lot of cool stuff going on behind the wall. We've got a lot of great patrons already. The community's growing, a lot of good interaction. It's a fun time. Again, if you like the show, rate it, review, whatever you can. Help us bump the sucker up so we can share it with other people and we can keep the show going for free, because Ryan and I have a lot of fun just talking and getting interactions with people in our mentions on Twitter. That is all I got. We will see you guys next week, most likely, unless we miss 3 more weeks in a row.